On this episode of the Green Street Beat, we're focusing on the sustainable environment element of the comprehensive plan. This plan will guide future development in Lee Summit. We talk about how to protect and enhance our environment to ensure clean air, water, and natural resources for future generations. Let's get to it. I'm joined today by the city's environmental specialist, Kara Taylor, and Assistant Director of Plan Services, Josh Johnson. Thank you both for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Eric.
Today, we're focusing on the sustainable environment element of the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan will guide future development in Lee Summit for the next 20 years or so. The goal for this specific element is to appreciate, protect, and enhance the natural environment to meet the community's needs today without compromising the ability of future generations to live and prosper. So one of the big elements of this is pollution. So I wanted to go to that first, but before we do, I wanted to kind of do a brief primer on the different types of pollutants. If you could explain, I guess, what we see in Lee Summit, why they're important to monitor, such as greenhouse gases, particulates, things like that.
Some of the pollutants that we see in terms of water quality are sediment, yard waste, general household trash and litter, what we call floatables, things that end up in lakes because stormwater isn't treated. So when it rains, it flows across yards and streets, picks up whatever debris it has, it goes down into ditches, storm inlets, travels through pipes and ends up in the nearest lake. And so you see property owners along lakes, you know, we've got six lakes in Lee Summit. So you see property owners around Lakewood and Prairie Lee and Rain Tree are significantly upset because they have debris in their lakes and they don't understand why they, you know, have those things. And so that's a massive problem. It's a cleanup issue. It's financial for those folks that live in that area. The city doesn't own any of those lakes. So it becomes a management problem for those neighborhoods. And then even separate from those neighborhoods, you've got those creeks and those waterways that are picking those things up, and the creeks run through people's neighborhoods and they don't like trash in their yards either. And their waterways, not to mention dissolved oxygen changes in those creeks, and you start seeing fish kills and you start seeing wildlife dying off when we have massive problems. Thankfully, in Lee Summit, we don't have massive problems. And so you're seeing the common everyday things are the sediments and the most commonly the yard waste and the trash and the litter. Then there's other things when you're talking greenhouse gas emissions and less tangible things, air quality and things like that. That's kind of a different track than the stormwater.
I wanted to talk a little bit and plug, and Kara can help me with this as well, is household hazardous waste. The city offers a service where you can drop off things like your paint and any, you know, chemicals in your house. Don't pour that stuff down the drain. We have a great video on it called You Can't Flush This. That's my plug for that service. And prescription medication, we have sites at all our hospitals you can drop that off at. Don't flush that stuff down the drain.
Right. And I think the police department offers an occasional pickup for or drop off for medications as well.
Another source of pollution that folks don't think about a lot, all our construction sites, when we're building roads or just private development, we require the review of a plan to control runoff from that. That's really to make sure we don't have silt running off the site, things like that, because one thing about dirt that people don't realize is chemicals attach to dirt really well. And then that runs off the site into our streams and waterways, and that is a delivery system for pollution. So that's a really important thing when construction's going on that our inspectors all look for, is to make sure the proper controls are in place to prevent that from happening.
So when we're talking about water quality issues, you mentioned the trash going to lakes and erosion. What policies could be put in place in the future when you guys are thinking about this comprehensive plan to address those issues so they don't become bigger issues?
Well, we already do have some controls in place. We have a lot of ordinances. Chapter 34 of the Code of Ordinances addresses illicit discharge, which is also illegal dumping. We have the property maintenance code, and we have the DNC manual. We have chapter 16 and 7 both kind of address that in the code of ordinances. Josh can speak probably a little bit better to those codes, but I know for development, you know, new projects, we have controls in the DNC manual, and then we have the other codes through the code of ordinances that help us going forward. You know, a lot of it isn't codes. A lot of it is education. You know, we have codes in place. We have things that we are controlling through ordinance and code, but a lot of it is teaching people what's allowed and what's not, teaching those developers, those contractors, why they have to have concrete washout stations. You know, not, it's not just because we have a permit. It's because, you know, concrete washout is highly basic and it will kill the entire watershed, you know, flowing to the nearest creek. So it's teaching folks that, you know, you miss the trash can at the nearest gas station and that's going to end up in a creek somewhere or in a body of water somewhere. You know, it's teaching people to be responsible for what they do and to be respectful of their environment. And, you know, we all live together in the community, so let's work together in the community, I think is kind of the bigger issue, more so than ordinances.
And you both had mentioned another type of pollutant, greenhouse gas emissions. In Lee's Summit, about a quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions are from cars. I know we've talked previously that cars are the primary way to get around in Lee's Summit for many people. So how do we encourage, I know we've been named a bicycle-friendly community, a walk-friendly community, so there are other options to get around, but how do we even further encourage those alternate modes of transportation to, I guess, reduce those emissions in the future?
Eric, I think related to the comp plan, it's when we consider development, we make sure that we're providing those bike and pedestrian paths that make connections to commercial areas that people are going to want to go to. You know, up to about a half mile, people are very, very comfortable, I think, biking that, and somewhere between like probably an eighth of a mile and a quarter of a mile is pretty comfortable for most people to walk. So I think when we're considering development, having a whole host of uses that people would want to enjoy can really help reduce those car trips. I also think over time, we're seeing the cost of electric cars go down. I think you're going to see more of those charging stations pop up. And I think due to economies of scale, we'll continue to see more and more electric cars on the road.
And sticking on the topic of greenhouse gas emissions, cars make up a quarter, but it's buildings that make up the vast majority of emissions in Lee's Summit. So when it comes to developments and neighborhoods, what's being done to make those more eco-friendly, embracing renewable energy? What are we doing to reduce the carbon footprint for those developments?
So right now, we don't have any regulations on the books that would require, like, let's say, solar panels on a residential home. One option, part of the building code the city has not adopted is the energy code, it's called. I think that's something we could look at in the future. We need to really customize it for Lee's Summit because that's an international code. But it has provisions like making sure the house is sealed up properly so that when you heat and cool the home, you don't have a lot of leakage, energy waste, essentially, things like that. I think on a building by building basis, that energy code is probably a great place to start and maybe have a community conversation about. Because the flip side of that is all those provisions can increase the cost of construction, and those costs will be, you know, those costs will be sent downstream to the consumer, basically, is what I'm getting at. So those are things we need to be very careful about as a community.
And I should mention too, the city, we've embraced solar so far. It's solar panels have been installed at the animal control facility. I think there are plans to install them at other city facilities. Are there other opportunities that we're looking at for the city to reduce its carbon footprint and embrace solar or other eco-friendly development practices?
Well, I don't know that we're looking at anything else. I think right now that solar panel project at Animal Control, it proved out very well and the economics of it really worked in our favor. And so that's why the proposal to put that on so many more city facilities and some of our sewer pump stations has made just fiscal sense. really, I think the city is going to look at it from the perspective of we really need it to be both an environmental win and a fiscal win. So I think the solar has opened the door to those discussions to look at more ways we can make our buildings more environmentally friendly.
We also have LED lighting. A lot of our traffic lighting, our parking lot lighting, we have converted a lot of those to LED. I won't say all of them. We don't own all of our lighting along roadways. We lease a lot of those. But there have been efforts to convert many of those, and I think that's going to continue to see those converted to LED.
And going back to the water quality discussion, with climate change, we're expected to see higher precipitation totals, more intense concentrated rainfalls in the future. You had touched a little bit on watersheds, which collect the water and the snow melt. We have two primary ones, Little Blue River and Big Creek. Can those handle a significant rise in precipitation, or is flooding and erosion a bigger concern when looking in the future?
It's a great question. They can handle it. All creeks, you know, handle water. They're designed to by nature. But the question is, how is the development that's encroached those floodplains going to be impacted? So there will be flooding, because that's what natural creeks and rivers do. They have a floodplain, a natural floodplain, and that's intended to be there. The question really is, how will the development be impacted by the flooding that is expected? And it's a great question. Unfortunately, I don't have a really great answer for that, because every creek functions differently in the city. So right along Little Blue, we do have some flooding. There are some projects going on, some talks going on with other communities around Little Blue and with NOAA and, you know, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and FEMA, about, and Corps of Engineers, about trying to do some work along the Little Blue. Big Creek, we don't have a lot of development around, thankfully. There's a little bit, and we don't have a lot of flooding that occurs along Big Creek. And just in a couple areas, we are working on some projects in those areas to try to help mitigate that. It's kind of a case-by-case basis. We see more flooding in the tributaries than we see on the main channels. And so, you know, are we going to be looking at some sort of structural controls, or really, I hate to say it, but they're not effective typically. It's typically trying to help property owners relocate, or in some cases, buyouts if we can. That's a very limited opportunity for us. We don't have a lot of money, but we do try to install projects that will help divert water and help rechannelize water to get to those main channels faster, so that we don't have the impacts along those properties. But I anticipate we will see them. It's going to be an ongoing issue for a really long time, us trying to find the funding to address those problems that are popping up.
Another issue when we're thinking about those concentrated rainfalls and heavier precipitation is flash flooding. So I know this is a big topic, this comprehensive plan looking into the future, and a big question is stormwater in Lee's Summit when we're looking at the future. So could you guys talk a little bit about, I guess, where things stand with stormwater right now and what could be done in the future? Because I know it is a question that often comes up, is how the city can address stormwater.
We do have a little bit of bond money that we have received, and that is dedicated to flooded structures, flooded residential structures. So when we are made aware of residential homes that have flooded, they are sent into us. We have the resident fill out a form that says, yes, our property is flooding. And we include them in an evaluation process. At that point, we have consultants that we use that help us evaluate why things are flooding. We've got staff on hand here, but we're really backed up. There's a lot of things going on right now. So we use consultants also to help us do some evaluations. And based on that, they're ranked. And then if there are solutions that can be found, we're trying to address those one at a time. It's a long list, and we keep getting more added. You know, like you said, the rain intensities are changing. So what wasn't flooding 10 years ago is now flooding. And so we just are working through a process. If we had something like a stormwater utility in place, we would have more ability to address those things on a larger scale. For example, the downtown district. Very little curb and gutter in the downtown district. And with curb and gutter, I get a lot of questions, why don't I have curbs in my downtown streets? With curb comes a lot of other things. It's not just a curb at the end of the street. There's storm pipe, there's inlets, the water has to go somewhere. And so we have to have, it's a much bigger plan. It's not just a localized plan at the corner of one street and another. It's a regional plan. We have to address how stormwater is going to get dispersed regionally. So it can't typically be just a small little project to address one little area. It's typically a much bigger geographic area. And that then comes into funding. We have to have funding to be able to cover that big of a project. So, Orchard Street was, part of Orchard Street was done several years ago, and then part of Fifth Street was done several years ago, and those were enormous financial projects. It's going to take a long time and a lot of money, and we recognize that that is something that needs to be done, but that's going to probably require a vote of the people to get that kind of a financial piece plan in place.
Yeah, and to touch on the utility issue, the idea of having a stormwater utility, if you're listening to this right now and there is a creek behind your house, that's not maintained by the city. We don't own it. I don't know that we own any creeks. I say that because many times throughout the year, Development Services and Public Works will get calls from somebody, hey, this creek's eating into my backyard. When are you guys going to come fix it? The answer is you or your homeowners association probably owns that creek. And that right there is an issue in and of itself. You get garbage in there, you get too many trees in a creek, and all of a sudden now it can't handle the same amount of water it normally would. You've got people's fences probably in a buffer around the stream. Those are going to impede flood water. It's a recipe for more and more flooding. You loop into that now the more frequent flash flood events we are likely going to be facing. And it's a community-wide issue. It really is. And I think that's what people need to realize is most of those creeks, or all those creeks, they're privately owned at this point. Other communities have handled that in different ways in about every permutation of management you could imagine. So there's a lot of different ways to tackle this problem.
So obviously the comprehensive plan deals with future development. When I was looking at the most recent annual report that Development Services put out, about 75% of the land right now in Lee Summit's been developed. That does include some park space, agriculture space. But as we look at that final quarter of land that's undeveloped, do you think there's a need to include more green space? Has Lee Summit become too developed, and does that have a negative environmental impact?
I don't think Lee Summit has become too developed. However, what I would say is, a lot of our undeveloped land is owned by one landowner, and they've talked about releasing that for development. It's the Property Reserve Incorporated land. We've talked about that on earlier podcasts associated with the comp plan, but I think what people need to keep in mind, I've got a map on my wall right now I'm looking at, and it's easier if you're looking at a big map, but we've got Lake Jacomo, Blue Springs Lake, James A. Reed, Longview Lake. Those are all great regional parks. To me, in a lot of our undeveloped land, the open space that needs to be set aside is probably smaller in scale for the most part. I also think where we have streams and creeks in those undeveloped areas, right now we've got an ordinance that requires stream buffers, so that inherently becomes open space. So I think there is an opportunity. I would just say I'm not sure we need a huge, like, 1,000-acre park in any of those areas. We've got a ton of those big parks around the city.
I was looking at the discussion forum the other day, which, for anyone listening, head to igniteourfuture.net. You can join the discussion. It's super easy to go to, and there's a lot of activity on it recently. But in the forum, there's been a lot of talk about trees. One person mentioned mandated trees. Others said how trees improve the landscaping and the overall look of neighborhoods. But it's also an environmental benefit because trees can improve air quality, reduce runoff, can temper climate. So So what's the city's policy on trees right now? And has there been thought to mandate trees on streets or things like that in the future?
For the most part, our tree inventory is managed by the Parks Department. They keep track of all the public trees, you know, within the right-of-ways and in the medians, in the parks. I think, and I don't want to speak on behalf of the Parks Department, but I would say they'd probably encourage more trees, if not, than not. You know, they would prefer to have more trees. With trees does come maintenance. You know, somebody has to trim them, and somebody has to, you know, especially when they're young, they have to water them and make sure they're successful. Environmentally, they are a huge benefit. I know some cities mandate a tree in the front yard and a tree in the backyard. To my knowledge, we don't do that. We could consider that at some point. I think that's something that Josh probably would want to address more than me. But I think, you know, proper placement of trees is a good thing when you put them in the right part of your yard to help provide shade on your home. When you use them for shading your driveway, things like that to help cool, you know, keep that those temperatures down. Just understanding that there is maintenance required. And while trees do provide that benefit, there are also, like everything, there's always that give and take, you know. Proper maintenance is going to be a benefit.
Right now, on commercial projects, we do require, I believe it's one tree for every 40 lineal feet along a street. That's in the private development, though. Eric, you mentioned street trees, and I think when a lot of people think of that, they think like it's right near the street and it's something the city maintains. We don't do that. There's a couple reasons, you know, and this could change in the future, but remember, you know, there's a cost of maintaining those trees. And also think three-dimensionally now, there's utilities underneath the ground. And tree roots are one of the most destructive things you can imagine. If you get the wrong species of tree, they will grab onto water lines and break them. Our water lines are beside all our streets. And then on top of that, you talk about electrical wires on top of or below. That could be an issue. And then cable TV, gas, all that. So there's things that need to be considered with that. And right now our philosophy has been to get those on private development projects. It just, from a maintenance perspective, the maintenance is the responsibility of the owner of that business. And you reduce utility conflicts. So that's kind of been the rationale in the past.
Correct. So to lean on back on that, anything installed in the right-of-way, which is usually the first 11 feet to 16 feet from the back of curb, is right-of-way for everyone's yard. And I'm primarily looking at residential in this case. Somewhere between 11 and 16 feet is the typical right-of-way, which means the city has the ability, or private utilities have the ability, to go in and replace, repair, do whatever needs to be done to those utilities, sewer, water, gas, electric, you know, phone, cable. So if you are installing trees, especially really nice expensive trees in those rights of way, not to mention the utility conflicts with just repairing the pipes, but if the city has to come in or utility has to come in and tear those out, we don't repair them, we don't replace them. So that's our typical standard. So if you put rock in the right of way, you put decorative plants and bushes, and we have to come in to repair them, we're not gonna replace them. That's another consideration with street trees. You know, it's a big investment to be putting in. It keeps the streets shaded, and they're usually very beautiful and big. And, you know, there's no question aesthetically they're beautiful, but there's a lot of maintenance with those right-of-way trees, and the primary reason we don't.
I wanted to touch a little bit on the air quality issues that are facing Jackson County and Lee Summit in particular. Overall, our air quality has been pretty good. I think all days are either in the good range or the fair range, but we do have elevated levels for certain things. What are those air quality issues facing Lee Summit and Jackson County?
You know, we don't have a lot of industrial in Lee Summit, which is a benefit. The more industrial facilities and industrial plants you have, the higher your increase in air quality, poor air quality is. So we don't have a lot of industrial, and we do have a lot of green space. We have a lot of lakes. So those are all positives for the city. I think the primary negatives you have is transportation. You know, that's probably it goes back sadly to transportation. You know, that's since we don't have a lot of industrial plants, that's going to be your primary source of air pollution that I'm thinking of right now.
We're a community of commuters. So, you know, we have a significant amount of people that every day go to Johnson County or Kansas City, Missouri. And so without the factories there, I think our main air quality concern is probably, you know, car exhaust, to be honest. And as I mentioned earlier, I think there's a lot of things at play right now that are going to see that reduce over time. You know, there's been talk about more transit routes into some of our major cities or to like a transportation hub. That's another thing to explore. And I believe that was talked about on the transportation podcast as well. So I think everything is trending towards market forces are happening and there's positive things going on in the city that are going to help us maintain or improve our air quality.
You're seeing the new developments are they're mixed use. So, you know, you're seeing the lower levels are some sort of retail and then those upper levels are residential. And that's going to also improve because you've got that walkability. We're increasing our density, increasing our walkability.
So last year, the Lee Summit landfill officially closed. What kind of challenges, but also opportunities, does that offer for Lee Summit?
Without having a landfill, we lose a lot of service. We used to be able to provide a whole lot of services, double recycling centers and education outreach programs and electronics recycling and all kinds of things. And that all went away when the landfill closed. So the downsides are that we don't now have the funding. When we had the landfill open, all those funds went toward all those programs. So we've lost a lot of those programs. We have kept the household hazardous waste facility that Josh mentioned and the yard waste facility, you know, the mulch and those kinds of things, trying to provide as many services as possible with limited funds. Beyond that, you're looking at cost. So trash rates start going up because now transportation becomes a factor. The trash trucks, the companies that are collecting residential trash can't bring it to us anymore. Now they have to travel to Harrisonville or to Kansas City or to Johnson County or, you know, Topeka or, you know, some further place out. So those transportation costs increase, which means individual trash rates increase. Nobody wants a landfill in their backyard. And so siting a new landfill is very difficult, very expensive. So there's your challenges are we have to use an existing facility, which also has limited life. Eventually they will close. You know, it just keeps pushing further and further out. The costs are going to keep going up and up. So we have to find an alternative. We do have in the plans, I believe recently approved, a transfer station. Recently approved or in the process of being approved, transfer station, which will allow collection of trash to be transported to our facility. It will be transferred into what we call a transfer truck and then transported out to those further away landfills, which will help control costs, help keep that a little bit more reasonable for people. But eventually, you know, their costs are going to change. They're going to start going up.
And you mentioned the services offered at the Resource Recovery Park, the household hazardous waste, mulch. We also have Ripple glass bins throughout the city. Downtown has recycling bins. Do you think that enough recycling options are offered right now, or would you like to see more?
I think everybody would like more, but there's a cost. Having a drop-off recycling center is pretty darn expensive, actually. But honestly, everybody has access to recycling in the city. Every single resident, single family home specifically, has access to recycling. Your trash haulers are required to offer it to you if you ask. There is a fee, but there's also a fee to operate the recycling center too. So it's not a free service, just like trash is not a free service. It's just that your recycling are going to a different place than your trash. Your recycling is, you know, being diverted to a recycling center where it's going to be segregated and then sent off for use. But there are fees for all disposing of all waste, you know, your paints and your household hazardous waste. If you're a Lee Summit resident, you don't pay that fee to bring it to our facility. If you're not a Lee Summit resident, you're outside the area, you will pay that fee. It's a $50 fee, or I believe it's still a $50 fee, to dispose of it. There are costs. The city picks up those costs for the residents. We can't pick up the costs for non-residents, but there are fees for waste disposal, no matter what that is. So while we may not have what the public would consider a free recycling center, we have one. Residents do have access to recycling at home, you know, so to say we don't have enough, or to ask if we don't have enough, I think we do. I think people just, you know, have that option to take it or not.
So overall, what's the biggest opportunity for Lee Summit when it comes to planning for a sustainable environment? What makes you excited for this comprehensive planning process?
Eric, I would say it's all in the name. When we say comprehensive plan, the city is bringing all of its master plans together, with a comp plan kind of being the middle of the wheel, the hub of the wheel, so to speak, so that our wastewater master plan, our sewer master plan, all of them kind of key off of the assumptions made in the comprehensive plan about future land uses. And when those all work together, I think we have an opportunity for bigger goals like a sustainable environment. You know, we mentioned earlier about encouraging more walking and biking through development. You know, if those development patterns are set right, you will get that opportunity. With those efficiencies comes efficiencies in things like water and sewer service. If you can service more people in a concentrated area like that, that's a benefit for the city and its taxpayers. So the thing I'm excited about is looking at all these issues holistically. I think that's great. You know, we just finished our strategic plan as well. So on the heels of all these efforts, we're really casting a very comprehensive die, I think, for the future at this point.
I'm excited for the public education, actually. You know, for the public to get involved. They've been involved in the process of developing the plans and then the education it requires to complete it, because it's not just city staff. This is something that requires the developers, the contractors, the consultants, the residents to be involved in. You know, ask those questions, get your council involved, get your neighbors involved. You know, it's not successful if we're not all working together for the same common goal. So if we want change in an area, you know, sustainability or stormwater or, you know, mixed use development, whatever it is, the public needs to be involved in those processes. And so I'm excited to see the public, you know, learn and grow and get involved in that with us so that we can all work together to make that happen.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys both being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Eric.
Have your voice heard in the comprehensive planning process. Head to igniteourfuture.net, where you can take surveys, join a discussion forum, and listen to past podcasts that explore different elements of the plan. The more voices, the better. Get involved today.